your Bible to Matthew chapter 26, and I'd like to have every eye on Matthew chapter 26. And I'm going to begin reading with verse 36, and I'm going to read down through verse 46. And we're going to talk about rare moments in time. Matthew 26, beginning with verse 36. Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then Jesus said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here, watch with me." And going a little further, he fell on his face and he prayed, "My Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "So could you not watch with me an hour? Watch, pray, that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Again, a second time, he went away and prayed, "My Father, if this cannot pass, unless I drink it, your will be done." And again, he found them sleeping. Their eyes were heavy. So leaving them again, he went away and prayed the third time, saying the same words again. Then he came to the disciples and he said to them, "Sleep. Take your rest later on. See, the hour is at hand. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise. Let us go. My betrayer is at hand." Jesus was crucified on a Friday morning at 9 a.m., according to Mark's account. The events that I just read to you are taking place very late the Thursday night and the early part of Friday. This event takes place less than 12 hours before Jesus will be crucified. Before the pressure of mankind and the sins of the world are dropped on him. Jesus leaves the upper room with 11 of his apostles. Judas had already left that room. The 12 of them, Jesus and the remaining 11, they come out of that upper room and they walk, the 12 of them, across the valley of Kidron. And they ascend the Mount of Olives. For on the Mount of Olives is Gethsemane's garden. And as they come to the gates of that garden, Jesus leaves 8 of those 11 at the gate, and he takes with him further into the garden Peter, James, and John. And Jesus says to the 3 of them, "My soul is sorrowful. I'm sorrowful even to death, his humanity is in agony in that garden. So Jesus instructs the three, you watch and you pray. And Jesus separates from those three a little piece, and he then falls down on his face in that garden and begins to pray. When a man is face down on the ground praying, this is serious prayer. He says, Father, if it's possible, let this be done another way. Let this cup pass. But whatever your will is, that's it. And Jesus then comes back to the three, and they're not watching. They're sleeping. They're not praying. They are asleep. Jesus wakens them. He says to Peter, Is this too much for an hour for you to keep watch here and to pray? Is this too much for you? And for the second time, Jesus separates himself, falls to the ground, and prays essentially the same prayer. For the second time, he goes back to those three, and they are asleep again. They're not watching. They're sleeping. So he separates again. It's interesting he wakes them up the first time. It's interesting the second and third time he didn't wake them. God will go with us for a while, and then after that, you better wake up or he's going to let you sleep on with this. So he separates the second time, and he comes back, and they're still sleeping. So he goes away the third time, and he prays essentially the same prayer three times as he is agonizing in that garden about all that is about to come down on him within the next 8 to 10 hours. And he comes back the third time, and they're still sleeping. And he looks up, and here comes Judas with the mob. And Jesus says, my betrayer is at hand. Brethren, listen to me. Here's the focus. The time that Peter, James, and John spent in the garden were moments of great significant possibility for them. The time that Peter, James, and John spent in the garden with Jesus, those were rare moments of time for those three men. That time that they spent in the garden with Jesus, this was a moment in time. This was a rare moment in time, because those moments in that garden, those three had an opportunity to see, how is Jesus going to handle his grief? How is Jesus going to handle loneliness? How is Jesus going to handle this great anxiety and this great pressure upon him? How is Jesus going to muster up the courage? How is Jesus here going to muster up the hope to do what needs to be done? These were rare moments of opportunity, and they didn't get any of it because they were asleep. There are two Greek words in the New Testament Greek for time. The Greek New Testament uses two different words for time. One of those words speak of time on a watch. What time is it? It's 11:30. Well, it speaks of time on a calendar. Today's Sunday. Tomorrow's Monday. It is a word that speaks of chronological time, how you and I keep time. But the other word that's used, it speaks of time as opportune moments that are within time. It is a word that speaks of moments that have significant possibility within those moments of time. Are you listening to me? It is a word that speaks of those rare moments of life that if you don't reach out and snatch them, they don't ever come back. They don't ever come back. The Bible speaks of that. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 2, behold, today is the day of salvation. Behold, now is the acceptable time. Hebrews 3, 7 and 8, today, when you hear his voice, harden not your hearts. Be not weary in well-doing, for in due season you'll reap if you faint not. There are those rare moments of time that come into our lives. If you don't write them, if you don't get them, they're gone. In the garden, Peter, James, and John, those moments in that garden with Jesus, Jesus is about to die. These are moments that will never be repeated. These are moments they'll never see again. These are lessons that could profoundly affect them, and they're asleep. Here's the application. Do we understand that God brings moments of opportunity to your life and mine? No. I mean, do we really, really understand that God brings these opportune moments, these rare moments of life that if we don't reach out and get, they're gone? And the tragedy is, I fear that so many times these moments of time of significant possibility, God brings us to them, and like Peter, James, and John, we just sleep through them. We just sleep. I have a single observation this morning with this thought. This thought is haunting. Here's the thought. God brings to your life and to mine opportune moments he gives to us for other people. Gotta say it again, because we're not getting this. There are rare moments of time moments that are within time as we count it. Opportune moments that God brings to you and to me for the benefit of other people. Now, let me give you two examples from the Bible. Don't judge me till I'm done. We'll look at those two examples, and then I'll show you how it's done today. In Acts, the 8th chapter, it was God. Let me say that again. It was God who brought Philip and the eunuch face to face. God is all over that. In the early verses of Acts 8, Philip goes down, verse 5, Philip goes down to Samaria and preaches Jesus. Philip is engaged in a citywide revival. Philip is preaching to the masses. Not only is he preaching to them, but according to verse 12 of Acts 8, he's being successful. The Bible says that when they believed Philip's preaching, they were baptized, both men and women. Philip is preaching to the masses. Philip is having success, and in the midst of this successful revival with the masses, Philip is called away to leave the city, to go down to a deserted place, and to preach the gospel to one man. Every soul is important to God. Philip leaves the city. He goes down on the road from Jerusalem to Gaza. And down there on that road, there is one man who is from Africa. He had traveled at minimum of 800 miles. He had gone to the city of Jerusalem. He had worshiped God. And now he was heading back home, 800 miles away. Philip goes up and joins him on his chariot, and Philip preaches Jesus to him, and that man is baptized into Christ and becomes a New Testament Christian. Now, here's what I want to ask you. When Philip was summoned to leave Samaria and go down there and meet that man at that moment, what if Philip had said, listen, I can't get down there today now? Are you listening to me? Look, I got so much going on here. Look, I can't get down there. But now I will get down. Now, are you listening to me? Philip meeting that man on that road, listen to me. Philip meeting that man on that road was an opportune moment. If Philip had not gone, if Philip had not been there, that opportunity would have never presented itself again. It was a rare moment in time. Either you get it or it's gone forever. Understand? Paul and Silas are in Philippi. Listen to me. Paul isn't in Philippi because that's where he wanted to be, because earlier the chapter makes it clear that's not where he wanted to be. Paul wanted to be in the province of Asia, but Paul was told, no, you're not going there. Paul said, well, then I'm going to go to Bithynia. And Paul was told, you're not going there either. And he ends up in a little port city, Troas. And he has a vision that sends him to Macedonia. From Macedonia to Philippi. Paul didn't want to be in Philippi. Paul didn't want to be in Macedonia. Paul didn't want to be on the continent of Europe. He wanted to be in the province of Asia. But Paul said, if this is what God wants, this is what I want. So he and Silas are in jail. They are beaten and then put in jail. And then here's an earthquake. Are you listening? Are you listening? Here's an earthquake. Paul did not take that earthquake as a sign. This is God's way of telling us we need to get ourselves up out of here. There was an earthquake, and Paul and Silas came face to face with a jailer. A jailer who was about to take his own life because he was responsible for the prisoners. Paul and Silas are face to face with him. Listen, this was an opportune moment for that jailer, and he didn't know it. This was a rare moment in time for that jailer, but he didn't know it. If Paul and Silas at that instant had not addressed him, that moment would have never been repeated, because that man was literally about to fall on his sword. Now here's the application. God is working in your life and in my life through providential means to bring to us opportune moments with others. Did you hear me? Today, 2019, Detroit, you, me, God is working through providential means in our lives to bring us to rare moments in time for the benefit of other people. Don't you ever think to yourself that because God doesn't work through miracles anymore, that he's idle. Don't you ever think to yourself that because God isn't working anymore through dreams and visions and audible voices, that God doesn't have anything to do with this. Brethren, God has not wound this world up like an alarm clock and set us out into eternity, and when the clock runs out, God's coming back. God is at work in our lives. He is at work in our lives differently than he did in the first century, but he's at work. God, as surely as God worked in the lives of Paul and Silas, as surely as he worked in the life with Philip, he is at work in our lives through different means, but God is busy with us. Romans 8:28. We know all things work together for good. Well, wait a minute. Who's working them out for good? It's not us. We don't have the power to work them out for good. Most of the time, we're not working them out for good. We've messed them up. We're not the fixer up, we're the messer up. It is God working in our lives to bring things to good for us. And here's what I'm telling you. And I believe this as much as I believe I'm standing right in this spot. God works in the lives of faithful Christians to get us in exactly the right place at exactly the right time with exactly the right person. But many times we are sleeping through this. We are sleeping through this. The only difference between us and Peter, James, and John is we are asleep and our eyes are wide open. So here's the question I have to ask. Have we, as Christians today, have we become so blinded by Satan, by the world? Have we become so blinded by pleasure and by getting stuff and by our own cares and anxiety? Have we become so blind that we can no longer see these moments of significant possibility that God sets before our lives? Opportune moments, rare moments within time, God brings to us in order for the benefit of helping somebody else. There's some things about this time that we need to understand. Brethren, first of all, we need to be seeking these opportunities. Seek them. Ask and it shall be given you. Seek and ye shall find. Jesus said, Matthew 7:7. You know what we're seeking? We're seeking wealth. We're seeking positions. We're seeking powers. We're seeking about us. We need to be seeking these opportunities. We need to be living every day with this awareness that God is at work in my life and I'm going to seek these opportunities. Secondly, we need to see these opportunities. See them. It's noon. It's Jacob's well. Jesus is sitting there at the well, and this woman of Samaria comes to him. He sees her, and he asks her, "Can you give me a drink?" Boom. Floodgates open. He saw her. We need to see people. I'm looking, but we're not seeing. We're not seeing. We need to seek these opportunities. We need to see these opportunities. And then thirdly, we need to seize those opportunities. It's not enough. It's not enough to seek them and see them. You got to seize these things. So here's what I wonder. And the other night, I'm driving, Deborah and I are driving through Dayton, Ohio. And I'm wondering to myself, how many opportune moments has God given me to do good? And I didn't see it. How many rare moments in time has God given you to encourage somebody, maybe even somebody you didn't know or had never seen before until that rare moment of time to encourage them? Do you understand that one sentence can make a person's day? Yes. You understand that? That one sentence, that 20 seconds, you can encourage somebody and make their day, and it doesn't cost you anything. I wondered that night, how many rare moments in time has God given all of us to share Jesus with somebody and we haven't done it? We have become so caught up in a culture that's driving itself away from God. We have become so caught up in a culture that's worldly, that's not spiritual, that we're not seeing what God is doing in our own lives. We're not. I mean, look, we claim to have the glorious gospel of Jesus Christ. We claim to have this devil-defeating, Christ-honoring gospel, and then we're unwilling to put together two syllables to ask somebody to come to church. I close with this. Richard Rogers taught in Lubbock, Texas for years and years. He taught preachers the Bible, missionaries the Bible. There were two courses that Richard Rogers taught that everybody spoke of: Old Testament history and the book of Romans. And everybody who was in those courses will tell you those were their two favorite courses. Years ago, the old joke in the church is that the only person who knows more about the book of Romans than Paul was Richard Rogers. It was masterful. And Richard teach school Monday through Friday, and then on Friday afternoon he'd leave out and go somewhere and hold a meeting, a weekend meeting. He preached like Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, and then get himself back to Lubbock to be in school Monday morning. So when he'd leave town, when he could drive, he always took the same fellow with him. So he said, we were driving down the interstate and we pulled off to get gas. And he says, we pulled up into the gas station and Richard Rogers looked at his friend and he said, look, I'm going to pump the gas. You go in the gas station and pump the attendant. So out in there he went. Talked to him about the Lord. The guy always had a track. He laid the track down and he walked out. Richard said, how'd you do? He said, the guy hates me and he ain't interested in it. Are you listening? Richard Rogers says we made a U-turn at the gas station to pull back onto the street to get on the interstate, and the guy who was inside comes out and he's got the track in his hand and he's got this big metal trash can outside, and Richard said we drove off and the guy took that flyer and just slung it down in that metal can. And he said we thought to ourselves, okay, he had a chance. Are you listening? 7 weeks later, on a Wednesday night, this guy that Richard Rogers always took with him, his phone rung when he came home from Wednesday night Bible class. And the guy on the phone said, is this so-and-so? And he says, yeah. He says, you don't know who I am. But he said, I live, and he told the city, and didn't mean anything to the guy. And he says, well, I work at this gas station. And it still didn't connect. He said, anyway, like 7 weeks ago, he said, I was cleaning that garbage can out, that metal garbage can. And he said, this track fell out onto the ground. And he said, I picked a track up, and instead of throwing it away, he said, I just stuck it in my pocket. Then the guy knew where he was talking about. He said, I remember. The guy coming, he said, I handed it to a guy and he threw away. He said, yeah, it was my boss. He said, so when I got home, he said, I read that track. And he said, I read it again.
And he says, your name and phone number is on the back. He says, yeah. So he said, like 4 weeks ago, he said, I called a local Church of Christ here and said, can you come talk to me about this track? And the guy told him, he said, listen, I just want you to know I was baptized tonight, and I'm calling to tell you about that. Brethren, listen. Nobody on this planet, on the planet, would have thought that a rare moment of time could come out of a metal trash can. But God can do anything. Peter, James, and John slept through their opportune moments. In the coming weeks, maybe this week, God is going to bring you face to face and nose to nose with a person in time. Don't sleep through it. Say something about it. Well, I don't know what to say. If you don't know what to say, then invite them to come to church. I'll tell them what they need to know. Peter, James, and John slept through theirs. Philip grabbed his. Paul and Silas grabbed theirs. And as surely as we're assembled here, God is going to bring somebody to you. God will bring a rare moment in time to you for the benefit of you helping somebody else. Seize that moment. Somebody here right now, God has brought you right this instant to a rare moment of time, not for someone else, but for yourself, to change your eternal destiny this morning. Don't sleep through this.